Hey there, I just wanted to give you a quick summary of the topics we covered in this bonus portion of Haiti Love's interview. First, we discussed the theology she was taught as a young Mormon, which is very different than what the LDS Church would like you to think today. It's obviously not a thorough examination, but if you don't know about it, it might blow your mind. It probably will, but not in a particularly good way. I'll admit it, I got a little heated in that portion of the interview. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to. It's just that I care very much about these issues, and that's how it came out. We talked about other topics after that, but I'll introduce them when we get there. So let's jump right in and hear Haiti explain the theology that she was taught as a child, specifically about races.
So before 1979, the Mormon Church believed that Black people cannot ever obtain the celestial kingdom because they couldn't hold the Melchizedek priesthood, which you have to have to go. Women have it only...
Sorry, I need to stop you. What's the celestial kingdom?
Heaven.
Okay.
That's the top.
So Black people can't go to heaven and continue because you were going to say something else.
Not back then, because they could not hold the priesthood back then. And this was actually asked to Brigham Young, like, when are you going to lift these rules so that Black people can go to the celestial kingdom as well? And he said, well, I'm not the one that made the rule. And they were like, well, who did? Well, God did. So when he lifts it, then they can go. And so he would be like these horrible snark. He was absolutely racist and horrible. This continued into, like I said, into 1979, where they were highly pressured to get rid of that. But they also basically said the Black man could only go to the celestial kingdom as a foot servant of the white man. And this was because of the war in heaven, where they talk about a premortal existence. We all lived before we lived here on earth. We chose all our problems. We chose our parents. We chose our situation. We basically were up there just waiting to like jump in a body when it was our time. And back in the war in heaven, before that all began, where people are getting into bodies too much, there was the fight between Lucifer and Jesus. And Lucifer is Jesus's brother. And they were arguing about how they should deal with us, with man. And Lucifer wanted to force us to be good and force us to do the things we needed to do and keep on the right path. And Jesus didn't want that. He wanted to give us choice. And so they had this big war in heaven. And this is, you know, in other theologies as well, where they say a third of the hosts of heaven fell because they followed Lucifer. But the Black people didn't, this isn't the curse of Cain. They didn't know which person to follow. And they got, I guess, anxious or whatever, and didn't know who to choose. So they sat on the fence and they didn't make a decision. Well, then they became known as the fence sitters and were cursed with a black skin. And so it's not the same for like Japanese people or anything else like that. That's a different whole thing. Like that wouldn't be the same thing at all. It's just Black people for this particular situation. So
this is where we start to see that Mormonism is not Christianity. Like, no. Doesn't matter if you believe in Mormonism or not. It's definitely not Christianity. There's no way that this is anywhere else. This is uniquely Mormon. And it's a unique perspective because, I mean, it kind of sort of angers me to hear about things like this because I have really good friends that have different kind of skin colors, right? And it's also a little bit ridiculous if I can say that, because what is Black, right? It's a spectrum. Like what there's a point where like someone is like right next to being Black or not. Like how does that even work?
No, they have a one drop rule. Yeah, one drop.
It just doesn't make any sense. And so that's what I have to say about this. But this is really where we start to see the true theology of Mormonism, because so far we've been talking about a lot of things that, you know, are very similar. You know, you go to church, there's a baptism, except the baptism for the dead, but you know, you'd have songs. There's a lot of things that are similar, but when we get down to the origin of theology, that Lucifer and Jesus are brothers, right? This is where we see the big divergence. And that's why, like, most Christians say that Mormons are not Christians, because it's very different.
And the theology there, which they don't teach in Sunday school too, they do teach God and Heavenly Mother had all these spirit children, and they like to fix all this stuff later. Just like the Black thing, they're going to go backward and be like, well, they can go now, so it's all good, right? And I'm like, no, that's awful. What? Like, they just want to like scoop it under the rug, really. And, it, you know, it stings because they were helping in Germany. They were CIA declassified FOIA documents say they got all of the cards from the Holocaust and helped like put them into a database, basically the first database of genealogy. And so that they could prove, and I quote, this is a quote, that the bloodline was not from a Jewess three back. So the Nazis were nice to them because you had to prove that bloodline to date back then during the war. You had to have it up on your wall three generations back to prove you did not come from a Jewess. And so the Mormons were helping with this because they wanted access to the records. And this is in the CIA declassified docs. So it's not me making it up or making some weird thing about it. This is how they really helped in that situation, because they were also concerned about the same thing.
Honestly, I'm not going to lie. Hearing about things like this makes me kind of angry. That's just how it is. I don't know how you feel. But anyway, Hedy wanted to add something regarding theology and the nature of the Mormon Jesus. So here it is.
Yes. And also, I did forget to mention one other thing on theology. They believe that Jesus Christ was made by a physical act. Okay. They are quoted as saying, and people can look this up, he was made with passions and pleasures just like any other man. So there's also a critical component to a difference, like he was made from a sexual union and not just, you know, miraculous. So,
oh, okay. So are we talking about like Mary had a husband and they, she's not a virgin.
Yeah. God came and deflowered her just like any other man would, because God, Elohim, was a man and he ascended to godhood and became a god, but he could do that. So yeah, that they like to really hide that piece, but people can look this up, and this was like literal for them. And it's old theology. I'm sure they try to hide that like crazy now, but that was taught to me. They didn't say sex. They would say things like passions and pleasures like any other man. These are in old conference talks. People can check this out, but they were very specific about, you know, if we're going to become gods one day, which is why we go to the temple, which is why I bring this up, of our own planet, although they took away the planet, which was kind of cool, but we no longer get the planet. And the planet didn't happen. When they want to hide things, they oftentimes just go, "What? That didn't happen." And I'm like, "Yes, it did. I remember this because I went to seminary for 4 years." I'm like, "No, they definitely taught about Kolob, the planet where God lives." And so it gets to the point where you're supposed to be just like God and ascend, and you'll be over your own planet and populate your, well, women will just have babies, but. Yeah.
If you had never heard about anything like this, it might sound crazy, but you can go back and this is fact checked. This is all in the records. I'm curious, for those of you who listen to this, had you ever heard about Kolob and the Mormon belief that God once was a man and now lives on that planet? Also, for the record, I want to clarify something. Mormon seminary is something that kids and teens go to. It's not the same as what most Christians would think when they hear the word seminary. Moving on, though, to the next part of the story. Hedy talked about the fallout and legal battle that her grandma had when she decided to reject Mormonism. Take a listen.
That's exactly what happened. When I got better and I started saying no to certain things, because my grandma had gotten really different and she was doing things that I didn't agree with. And I would tell her, no, I'm not going to lunch with you on somebody else's bill that's a handicapped person that you're supposed to take care of. I'm not doing that anymore. I am not going unless I can pay for it or you're not using money from that person. Like, I'm not doing ungodly things. Like, it's not happening. And she was getting really mad at me because I was her, like, lunch date. I was kind of like her spouse because he died so early. Like, and I promised I would take care of her, and she was still young. Like, she's only like 70 at this point, if that. I mean, you know, she's young. She's wanting to do all kinds of stuff. And, you know, she had done a lot for my family. she did things that I didn't want her to do, like buy a trip to Disneyland that we couldn't afford. And she would always just say, oh, you can pay me later. I'm like, I don't want to pay you later. I can't pay for this. This is crazy. Why? I'm like, no. And then you'd tell her no, and she would give it to the kids on Christmas morning. Great. You know, what do you do with that? Say no, like the everything's bought and paid for, and you're just like, this is crazy. So I knew she was going to pull some shenanigans for that. I knew she was going to be mad about money and use it over my head because she'd done it before when there were issues with my first husband. And they had helped me with school, which my grandpa had said was all forgiven when I graduated, as long as I went through and finished and became a nurse. And I did. And then right before he died, he said it was all forgiven. I quit my job to take care of him for months. It was like almost 2 months, and I didn't have any income coming in at all. So she had to pay like my house payment and stuff while I was his 24/7 nurse. And we just, yeah, I knew it was all going to come on my head because I'd seen what she'd done with other people before. And it did. And so as I started listening to more Christian stuff, anti-Mormon propaganda, my daughter's boyfriend is getting ready to go on a mission, and she is really upset that I'm listening to this. Well, this is before Bluetooth headphones. Like, I'm just carrying my laptop around in the kitchen while I'm cooking or whatever. She could leave the room. It's not like I was forcing that. It's not at dinner time. It's just where I am. And she, I guess, told my grandma, and my grandma decided to go and write a letter with the state that I was beating her in her neck and head daily and all these abuse allegations. Well, for people that say they can't just take your kid for that, yes, they can. If they go down and say that there's any allegation for over 30 days while they're doing their investigation, they will remove that child from your home because of safety, because of kids that really are being harmed, and they have to do that. So the police just showed up at my house. I had no idea this had happened, and they were there to collect her things. And I mean, I was devastated. I mean, she was 17. She was getting ready to go into her first, you know, year of senior, her senior year. I'd never missed anything like that. It was a no contact order. I couldn't call her, speak to my grandma, speak to anybody until the hearing. And I was completely freaked out. I mean, me and my husband were dating at this time. It was just probably one of the worst things I could ever imagine. But also I knew she knew how to do it because she did it with my mom. And that's exactly, now, was the allegation true with my mom? Yeah, but these were not. And so we had to go through the process of proving it. And at the hearing, yes, it was dismissed because they told her, you have had some issues, you know, with this. You didn't write this, you know, your grandma wrote this. So can you tell us, in your own words, what's going on? And she just said, I don't know. My grandma wrote that. And so that kind of threw the court case out, thank heavens. And, you know, they'd interviewed my other kids and all the things that they do. But also they kind of gave me some advice is don't force her to come home, because if you do, it might make it worse. And so instead we like did therapy and stuff together. And she did eventually come home at that point later. But my grandma, since she lost that case, she got even more vindictive. She starts sending me all these letters like, you better put your garments back on. You better start doing this. You better start go back to church. She's sending the missionaries to my house. She's sending the bishop, like all this crazy stuff. And my husband was we were dating, and he's like, your grandma. I'm like, I know, it'll blow. I thought it would blow over. And then she sued me in a court of law for every penny she ever spent on my kids. And she tried to take my ex-husband's house because we're divorced. Like, she's going to put a lien on his house because he was already paying me out. We had an agreement. So I kind of freaked out because we had a bad marriage, but he's a good guy. Okay. Like, he doesn't believe in Christ. That's his deal. But like, he didn't deserve that. So I teamed up with him to make sure that didn't happen, which totally ticked her off. Like, that was like the end of all be all. So then she won. she won, but they got it off of his house. And I just took the hit. I was like, whatever you got to do, do it. But like, we're divorced, leave him alone. And so like, that's what they did. And it was a lot of money. And I had had this Jeep that was my grandpa's. It was super old, but it was a CJ7, 1980 CJ7. And they were worth kind of some money because everybody wrecked them, I guess. And they took that from me. They took everything they could take. They took it all. And I just didn't care anymore. I was like, fine, whatever. And at that point, I was pregnant then. I got pregnant. You know, she was upset about that because we weren't married, which, yes, we should have been married. But I was 37, like almost 38. Like, I mean, yeah, we're old enough to take care of the kids. Like, it's fine, whatever. But she was just relentless. And she ended up passing away. And I told my cousin, I'm not coming. And he called me and he said, I think she's waiting for you, though. And I said, I swore I'd never see her again because this has been such a nightmare. She's been so bad. And he's like, I know, but you're a Christian. I was like, right. That was a hard one because she like tortured me for years, you know. And anytime she could make my life harder, she did. And she told my whole family I was a thief and a liar and that I stole from her. And this court case made it look like that. It didn't matter that it was for a Disneyland trip I didn't want. None of this mattered. To my family, I was an apostate thief, bad person. And so I did go to the hospital, but that was also really hard because they're all there. So it's like walking into this room where everyone hates you, you know? And I had my mom with me and that was good. And we gave her like a prayer and she had been in like a semi-comatose state. She hadn't talked for 2 days. That's why they called me and said, you better get down here. And she let out the most blood-curdling scream when my mom said, Jesus loves you. And I was like, this is nuts. I am getting out of this room. Like I did not sign up for this much crazy right now. Like, she needs Ativan. I was like, you put her back to sleep. I don't know. But we didn't abandon her or anything. But I went out of the room. But it was weird. It was really weird.
That was pretty dark. And unfortunately, it didn't end on a good note. The reality is that not all stories have a beautiful ending. It's sad, but that's the reality of the world that we live in. I need to say, though, that Haiti was very clear that if she had to go through it again, she would probably act differently, but she didn't know any better at the time. I didn't want to leave you on a bad note, though, so here's the story of how Haiti became a successful podcaster against all odds and purely by the grace of God.
But it's also very important when we talk about our talents, right? Like, okay, what about the guy that buried his and did nothing? I knew I had something. And I'm not a priest or a preacher or anything, but I knew I went through this thing and maybe I could help somebody, right? But I didn't know how because I'm in the middle of Utah and nobody wants to hear my garbage and they all know all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, what can I do? And I remember praying about it and I was really into podcasts, like super into podcasts and like more conspiracy, even murder ones. Like I wasn't into like just Christ stuff. Just that was Derek Prince's stuff. But I was studying this other stuff just in my spare time. And I remember switching all that over, trying to make it more about how I want to align my life. Like no more murder, maybe lay off the murder, right? And learn some things. And so I kept thinking, man, wished I could talk to people like this. I think I could help people. And I kept having this feeling like, oh, you should do a podcast. No, that's stupid. You don't even know how to upload anything. And I didn't. And I finally wrote in to a podcaster that I knew, that I listened to. I didn't know him. Like I just liked him. And I said, you should do a story about blah, blah, blah. And I sent him a bunch of information because I like to research and that was all. And he answered me. I remember being like, oh my gosh, he answered me. This is so crazy because to you, they're famous. You know, like this is like crazy. And he's like, I don't know anything about what you're talking about. I'm not a Mormon. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Why don't you come on and tell me about this? Because it wasn't about Mormonism, but it had little pieces of that. And I said, well, why? Like, everybody knows that stuff. You could just say it. And he's like, no. So he talked me into it and I went. And then I was so scared. And it was actually about a school. It wasn't about the stuff I talk about now. It was like a dark thing about school and underground tunnels and some stuff they were showing in the school. And then he said, wait a minute. What'd you say about Mormonism? He kept hearing these little undertones. He's like, why don't you come and talk about that? I'm like, why? Nobody cares about this. Like, everybody knows. He's like, maybe where you live,